Cure the Cancer of Unforgiveness. Written by Mark Ahrens. Narrated by Alan Taylor. Introduction. The goal of this book is to help you find true freedom and forgiveness. Freedom, where you can be at peace, shout with joy, and smile. Forgiveness, so you feel loved and can love again. If you are old enough to listen to this book, there is no doubt you've been wronged and felt the painful sting of offense. Someone has hurt or transgressed you, or you have angered someone else, and now, sometimes many years later, the irritation festers. We find ourselves unable to shake an unforgiveness cancer that won't go away, nor will it stop spreading. It is a cancer that threatens to steal our joy, kill our love, and destroy our relationships. There is no doubt that many of us suffer from terrible pains of unforgiveness. Families are broken, neighbors fight, and people whirl in tornadoes of offense. We are angry and divided. We are in desperate need of a real solution, something that goes beyond any man-made formula, trite method, or pat answer. In this book, we will discover heaven's secrets to forgiveness, truths so powerful that they work 100% of the time, truths that never fail, practical, pragmatic, and proven truths, eternal truths hidden in the plain sight of God's Word. The time for division, anger, and hanging on to offense can finally be over. Here, we are going to discover God's forgiveness freedom so you can live it now and for the rest of your life. It's time to remember your song so you once again can sing it out in joy. Chapter 1. The Cancer That Destroys. We have all been stricken with unforgiveness in our lives. Some of us have been horribly betrayed, deeply hurt, or absolutely lied to. Others have been bullied, swindled, humiliated, physically injured, belittled, and/or misunderstood. When you throw in feeling devalued, unappreciated, or ignored, you get the picture. No doubt you've been wronged, and perhaps in ways that seem unthinkable. These offenses are most likely cold and hard facts, not just feelings, and they can be overwhelming. Sometimes offenses are fresh, like a cut that bleeds. Others are a lifetime ago, an old injury where deep pain lingers and never goes away. Either way, we suffer. Later in this book, we're going to learn how and why Jesus described this kind of pain as torture. Offense can certainly be a terrible and ongoing suffering. The stakes are high. That's why we need to know what forgiveness really is. Even more than that, we need to experience how to forgive when it often seems impossible. To do this, we're going to start with three foundational forgiveness principles. 1. Why Satan loves unforgiveness. We must know the rules of engagement so we can fight any battle. If we don't know who or what we are fighting, how can we win? 2. What forgiveness really is and is not. We need clarity. For example, are forgiving and forgetting somehow related or not? Confusion simply paralyzes us with indecision. 3. How to forgive, even when you are overwhelmed with emotion. We will go far beyond show and tell. Jesus will help you experience forgiveness. Here, you will discover Jesus' forgiveness secret. It is a secret that works every time, all the time. Why Satan loves unforgiveness. Satan loves when we are entitled to be sad, mad, or angry as hell from an offense. He tries to encourage us to stay inside that hell until you are repaid or somehow made whole. In other words, he wants us to believe with all our hearts that we have every right to be offended and stay offended. Offense is the bait that Satan dangles in front of our eyes in a million different ways, including know your rights, stick to your guns, Be insulted. Bear a grudge. Be in a huff. Get your nose out of joint. Be put off. Have hard feelings. Take exception. Or be rubbed the wrong way. He lights the fire of offense, and we pour on the gasoline to do his dirty work as we replay in disbelief how we were violated. Like a bull, we only see red, so we charge at Satan the matador. Hell itself cries, "Ole!" while the matador deftly steps to the side and thrusts his sword into us. Then we rewind and play the tape of offense over and over again. Like the injured bull in a fit of rage, we charge again as we rightfully believe, "I wasn't properly acknowledged. I wasn't appreciated. I wasn't mentioned. I wasn't..." Now let's flip it around. "I was told. I was lied to. I was laughed at. I was..." And the lie gets even bigger when we speak Satan's mantra, sometimes even out loud. One variation goes like this. "I'd rather rot in hell than forgive them, A, for what they did to me, B, for not acknowledging me, C, for the way they talked to me, D, for how they chose to ignore me, E, for their deliberate inconsideration, F, for how they purposefully lied to me, G, for what or how they talked about me, H, for hell, for what they didn't even say about me." Notice the stepping stones to hell. After all, Satan tells us, why on earth should you even think about forgiving someone who has hurt you so deeply, especially when they don't even care or choose to be purposefully oblivious? Like cancer, unforgiveness can spread maliciously, snaking through our thoughts, even invading our sleeping time. Then this tumor can move to attack the healthy parts of our lives as it seeps from our home into our work or vice versa. It is a poison. One popular magazine says, people who have forgiven jumped an average of 3 inches higher in a fitness test than their still bitter counterparts, suggesting that ill will can literally bring you down. And when you hold a grudge, you tend to stew over it. This can deplete the availability of certain cognitive-boosting resources in your body, like blood sugar, that can help you cope with physical challenges. Unfortunately, the malignancy of unforgiveness often attacks even further as we struggle to forgive ourselves. Perhaps you've made a bad decision, said the wrong thing, or hurt someone so a cloud of regret hangs over your head. This is where so many people say, how can I possibly forgive myself if my own family won't forgive me? As we play this recording over and over, rinse and repeat our guilt and blame inside our own minds, we find ourselves lost in isolation, depression, or even physical sickness as the cancer continues to spread. Some of us unknowingly aid this disease as we convince ourselves that we are so bad, it would even be impossible for God to forgive us. The cancer of unforgiveness is killing us. But it can get even worse when Satan whips out his ultimate unforgiveness drumroll, his biggest play, his big lie inside all the small lies, his end game. See, Satan is just warming up once he has convinced us not to forgive others or ourselves. Beyond stealing joy or killing the love in you, his goal is to destroy you. That's why Jesus said, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy." John 10, verse 10. Like ABC, where destroying is far worse than killing. Destroying is like the bad guys in the movies who say, "First, I'm going to burn down your house. Then I'm going to kill you. And then I'm going to kill your family." In the Old Testament, we see a description of how a conquering king would go out of their way not just to kill, but to destroy the king whom they had conquered. Roughly 600 years before Christ, the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar burned and pillaged Jerusalem, and we read, "The whole army fled, but the Babylonian army pursued King Zedekiah and overtook him in the plains of Jericho. All his soldiers were separated from him and scattered, and he was captured. He was taken to the king of Babylon, who killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. He also killed all the officials of Judah. Then he put out Zedekiah's eyes, bound him with bronze shackles, and took him to Babylon, where he put him in prison till the day of his death. Jeremiah 52, verses 7 through 11. Imagine the violence of that moment, those graphic images lasting forever in Zedekiah's mind. Nebuchadnezzar wanted to destroy Zedekiah by searing that horrible scene into his thoughts for the rest of his life. If we fast forward to the time of Jesus, we see how the Sanhedrin tried to do the same thing in their attempt to totally destroy Jesus and any following he may have had. That's why they used the power of Rome to beat, whip, scourge, and crucify Jesus with the most painful death they could possibly inflict. They didn't want to simply stop Jesus. They wanted to end him, annihilate him and his following. Have you ever been so mad at someone that you felt this way, at least in the moment? It is scary just to even consider how far beyond killing us Satan wants to torture, blind, and destroy us with unforgiveness. Destroy you. He knows when we are laced with unforgiveness, we are on the stepping stones of destruction. Suddenly, our offended spirits decide we have the right to be offended by God. Just imagine the millions who have listened to Satan as they blame God, are mad at God, think God let them down, and refuse to forgive God for their troubles. It is where we become the judge and jury as we put God on trial, where we demand an explanation from God and get to decide if it is adequate or not. I heard one man say, "I don't believe in God, and if I did, I'd hate him." After all, Satan helps us reason, how could a loving God allow all this pain? Or how could an all-powerful God allow terrible things to happen? Now, this is all deep stuff we are going to address, but for now, consider how, when we are all alone in our pain and problems while offenses swirl in our minds, Satan has us right where he wants us to be, alone. We find ourselves in a position where we would never share our problems with anyone, because if we did, just imagine what they might think. In our modern world of look-at-me social media, we are taught to never show our dirty underwear, never admit to weakness, never let anyone see you cry. Instead, we keep secrets and try to tough things out. But Satan knows when we are alone, he can torture us, and no one will hear us scream. Don't forgive others. Refuse to forgive yourself. Blame God for all the wrongs of this world. Take offense. Hold on to it and churn it around in your mind. Torture yourself, all alone, while you try like hell to keep your fake smile going. Yep, it is fake news. In addition to all this, Satan knows when we are alone, he can toss difficult concepts our way. He's delighted when we confuse forgiveness with forgetting, misunderstand forgiveness and reconciling, or get lost in thoughts of retribution, vengeance, justice, and emotion. When we add these difficult concepts into our already heavy bag of offense, we paralyze ourselves with the weight of perplexity. We get stuck. If we handle these issues wrong, we potentially live in a lifetime prison of regret. We suffer, and so do those around us, as we assume broken relationships are normal. "Oh God," we cry, "why can't I shake all this angst and unforgiveness?" Let me share a true story about Sally and Jane, two lifelong best friends. Even though Sally was a Christian and Jane was noncommittal toward faith, they played, traveled, and dined together all the time. Jane had an idea to start a new business, but it would require $100,000 just for the initial inventory. To be successful, the business would require the right location, hiring the right people, creative advertising, and years of hard work with absolutely no guarantee of success. As Jane's dream got closer and closer to a reality, she came against a giant roadblock because no banks or investors were willing to loan or invest $100,000 in such a risky business undertaking. After a lot of talk about Jane's roadblock, Sally prayed about it and decided to use her life savings to loan Jane the full $100,000. Because it had a large risk of never being paid back, they both agreed that Jane would pay a super high interest rate. Jane was determined more than ever to be successful and always worried about her responsibility to repay Sally. So she worked both hard and smart, often working 80 hours a week as she built an amazingly successful business. She diligently made payments to Sally and within a couple short years, paid Sally everything she owed, including the agreed-upon interest. But for some reason, Sally felt like she should get more. Maybe it was because the business was so successful. Maybe it was because she had risked everything to help her friend. Or maybe it was out of jealousy of Jane's success. Suddenly, out of nowhere, they exploded into a heated argument about it. Almost instantly, and with no forethought, these best friends each felt irrevocably offended and went their separate ways. Worse than that, they never spoke to each other again. When the topic of Jane or the business was mentioned, Sally's face puckered up in anger, and she refused to talk about it. Likewise, Jane couldn't believe how unreasonable Sally had become after all of her hard work. The cancer of unforgiveness made both furious as they closely listened while Satan screamed, warning each of them loudly to know their rights and stick to their guns, always reminding each of them that they had been wronged. To make matters even worse, Sally's own business began to struggle, and soon her life became consumed with perceived injustices as she isolated herself into a lonely, angry, woe-is-me type of pity party. As they each continued to add gasoline to the fire, Satan swooped in and blew on the flames. It didn't take long before their ideas about God were shattered. At first, Sally asked, "What did I do to deserve this?" but soon decided it was God's fault. After all, if God was all-powerful and loving, why didn't he simply prevent all this angst? The combination of these complex questions and what she felt were no good answers caused her to throw God out the window. For Jane, this whole incident was a part of her long-standing slide to atheism, simply because since her childhood, she had been taught how Christians were hypocrites. And now, given the way Sally acted, all this added more proof in her mind that Christians are people who suffer from wishful thinking when, in her mind, there simply is or was no God. Unfortunately, more than 10 years after their refusal to speak to each other again, Sally died unexpectedly, all alone and virtually friendless. Beyond killing, Satan had done everything he could to destroy her. What a tragedy. Maybe your story is tragic too. While God whispers, "Forgiveness will set you free," Satan yells, "Forgiveness will cost you dearly." In a similar way, God told Adam and Eve to not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil because God loved them and wanted them to be free. But Satan wanted to shackle them with sin, so he promised Eve she would become like God, knowing good from evil. Though Satan's words were twistedly true, his purpose was to cast doubt on God's word and character, implying that God did not have Eve's best interest in mind. We have all heard Satan whisper or shout, "Forgiveness will cost you dearly." But what about the costs of unforgiveness? Do we ever add these costs up? How long we must be unforgiving before we are finally repaid? How much disgust must I exhibit before my offender realizes they owe me? How many years should I ghost someone? What will it really take to allow these people back into my life? Instead of asking these questions, we buy into Satan's lies as we focus on our own hurts. It's like we are on a road trip through life and take an unforgiveness detour where we get lost. Soon we become so lost that we forget how to get back to where we started, and we don't know where we took a wrong turn in the first place. We plot ahead until we decide there is no turning back. How can anyone possibly put a price tag on this cancer? In this chapter, we've seen the darkness and the incredibly high costs of unforgiveness. Coming up, let's discover what forgiveness really is. In doing so, we will see the dazzling and exciting light of freedom in forgiveness. It's a light that extinguishes this darkness. Let's get ready to turn on that light. Will you please say this prayer out loud as you listen to it? Dear Jesus, I have been deeply offended and am overwhelmed by it. I'm struggling with forgiveness and I need your help. I cannot even begin to forgive on my own, so I want to ask you to forgive the people who hurt me. In your mighty name, amen. Questions for you. Who have you struggled to forgive and why? How long have you struggled with this and why? Name all the reasons and ways your unforgiveness has cost you. Chapter 2. What is forgiveness? In the first chapter, we talked about the dark realities of how destroying someone with unforgiveness can be far worse than killing them. There is no doubt that we are ready to discover true freedom inside forgiveness. Forgiveness. So you feel loved and can love again. Freedom. So you can find your song and sing it again. Let's start by seeing how forgiveness can be so confusing. For example, how does forgiveness relate to forgetting or reconciling? In light of this confusion, one of the first steps towards finding freedom in forgiveness is to first understand what forgiveness does not mean. Forgiveness is never a free pass for someone to keep hurting us, nor does it mean we have to excuse or tolerate someone's transgressions. Forgiveness does not require forgetting, nor does it require us to trust or reconcile with the person who hurt us. Furthermore, it does not imply that we have to be happy about a situation, nor does it release an offender from legal accountability. In addition, forgiveness is rarely found inside any trite formula, such as, try to empathize with the person who offended you, or try to remember a time when someone forgave you, or try to understand their point of view. While these ideas may have some merit, we are not here to struggle through a long-winded forgiveness process that requires years of struggle and/or counseling where true peace and joy may never really happen. We're also not trying to find something nebulous where results are found somewhere beyond the next step or the next one. Instead, we are here because we want to discover true freedom from all this anger, hurt, and turmoil. We want something that works every time, all the time. We want true freedom. So as hard as this may sound, the only way to approach this is to get real and personal by thinking about the person or people who have offended you. As we think of the pain they have caused, we are faced with some important choices. First, we could lash out at them, demand an apology, seek revenge, or cut them out of our lives altogether. Another common coping mechanism happens as we secretly hope that they get what they deserve, or wish, I hope God punishes them. After all, they hurt us and may not even care. A second track might be to wallow in some type of despair or self-pity, so we isolate, feel sorry for or focus on ourselves. Perhaps it's where we believe we are prisoners of woe, like being prisoners of war, so we feel overcome and feel like we can never escape. Of course, Satan reminds us we have every right to be offended, but no matter which track we take, we rarely ask ourselves, how long will it take to find peace and freedom if we choose any of these paths? In fact, will we ever truly be free? We need to hang on to all these questions and choices because knowing how difficult they are can help us understand what forgiveness really means. What forgiveness really means. Let's start by paraphrasing an amazing story in Matthew 18. We will deep dive into this story later, where Jesus told a parable to explain forgiveness. His story was about a servant who owed the king 10,000 bags of gold. It was a massive debt, and the king knew it, but the king chose to release the servant from having to repay it. Here Jesus shows us how true forgiveness is really a matter of justice, and justice is something we get to choose. Like the king, we get to decide what justice really means. Now, there is no doubt that this simple formula does not even begin to address the pain you are feeling from being offended. But believe it or not, this is the first step in understanding what forgiveness means. We must be able to define forgiveness in the simplest of terms, like learning to add before we multiply. Let's look deeper now and first notice how the king knew exactly what was owed to him. He had counted the cost. Jesus is showing us inside his story how a big part of good decision-making requires that we need to count the cost. And every choice, whether it is good or bad, has a cost. For example, right now you are making a choice to listen to this book instead of spending time to watch a show, chat with a friend, etc. Every choice we make, even good choices, has a cost because we can only do one thing at a time. That's why the first step of forgiveness requires us to determine what someone owes us. In other words, we count the cost. Only after we know what's owed to us can we make the choice to release someone from their debt. They may owe us an apology, money, restored trust, something they have stolen, the cost of lost virginity, or the restoration of our reputation. They may owe us for lost sleep, for the shock of a situation, for trauma, fatigue, or physical injury. And now comes the most important part. It can only happen after we know what someone owes us. The crucial decision happens when we say to ourselves, and not necessarily to the person who offended us, "I release you from the debt you owe me." And right here in plain sight is the first secret to forgiveness that so many of us miss. Did you see it? It is an inside-out secret. When we release someone from a debt they owe us, we are at the same time releasing ourselves from our own need to recover what is owed to us. This is a miraculous mystery. When our own need to be repaid is gone, we ourselves are the ones who are truly set free. It's like a chalkboard covered with the word debt and erasing all of it. Suddenly, you've decided that your own needs to be repaid are gone. You've erased your own need to collect the debt. You've cleared your mind so you can be free of all that clutter, all that poison. Now, instead of allowing someone else's actions or inactions to rule your life, you are back in charge. This is what forgiveness of others does to us. Can you feel that breath of freedom? Suddenly, our minds are clear again. When you release someone from the debt they owe, you become free from your need to collect that debt. Let's read from Matthew and unpack even deeper meaning. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to 7 times?" Jesus answered, "I tell you, not 7 times. But 77 times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. 'Be patient with me,' he begged, 'and I will pay back everything.' The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. 'Pay back what you owe me,' he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, 'Be patient with me, and I will pay it back,' but he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. "You wicked servant," he said. "I canceled all of that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant, just as I had on you?" In his anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he could pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you, unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart. Matthew 18, verses 21 through 35. Notice how the king forgave a debt so big it could never be repaid in several lifetimes. The king chose to forgive the debt without getting angry or getting even. The king knew the amount of debt, but decided to let it go unpaid. Before Satan or circumstance screams, "There is no way you could ever forgive the situation you are currently in," it's important to see for yourself the truth, that you indeed have the power inside you to forgive debts, because you have already done it. Even in the heat of battle, you exercise the power to forgive someone of a debt they owe you. Here are four examples to prove it. 1. Your child spills the milk. How can they possibly repay you? They cannot. Yet you not only forgive them, but you also never even think of it as a debt they owe you. You write it off as part of parenting and life. 2. Your spouse does the wash and accidentally has a red item with all the whites, so the red bleeds everything into pink. Can you feel the pain of losing your favorite white shirts? Your spouse owes you big time, but instead of getting upset, the two of you get a good laugh out of it. 3. You get fired from your job that you have been absolutely devoted to, and you are so disappointed or mad that it seems to consume you. You're angry at the boss, the company, the industry, or even God. But then you stumble into a new opportunity that you would have never previously considered, and suddenly you let go of all that debt, the horrible feelings that they owe you. In fact, you might even feel bad you got so upset. 4. You lost the relationship of your dreams because of an argument where you both took offense. Afterward, you are so beat down with sadness or anger that you cannot sleep. Now, here you are years later, deeply in love with someone you would never have met if that first relationship hadn't ended. Amazingly, if you accidentally ran into the person from your first relationship, all you would do is smile and wish them well. There is no doubt that when you think about your past, you'll discover you already have the ability to forgive someone's debt. And best of all, you'll see for yourself how making your choice to forgive them freed you from harboring resentment. Let's summarize what we've learned about forgiveness so far. Forgiveness is a decision based on justice. You count the cost, and you get to choose to release someone from a debt they owe you. When we release someone from the debt they owe, we are truly releasing ourselves from our own need to recover what is owed to us. Therefore, because our own need to be repaid is gone, we ourselves are the ones who are truly set free. Now let's go back to the situation you're currently in. Even with this knowledge of what forgiveness is, it may still feel impossible for you to say, "I'm going to release them from their debt and release myself from my need to be repaid." Don't worry if that is the case, because the next chapter is going to show you how to forgive as you experience Jesus' second secret to forgiveness. This secret contains the three most powerful words in the entire Bible. Can you guess what they are? Let's discover these words, make them our very own, and unleash their power in your life today. Questions for you. We've already named the person who has offended you in the previous chapter's questions. So now let's go deeper and write down as specific as we can, what exactly do they owe you? If it was possible for you to release them from this debt, a debt which they probably would never repay you anyway, Can you see how your own need to be repaid would be released? Even though it may be hard to consider, write down how you would feel about this and why. If you never release them from the debt they owe you, when and how would you ever be free? Chapter 3. How to Forgive.
Hi, this is Luke with Little Big Things, and I want to pause our audiobook for just a minute. Now that we know what forgiveness is, let's discover the three most powerful words Jesus ever said. And at the same time, we're going to learn the secret of how to forgive, even when forgiveness seems impossible. Then let's learn how forgiving is different than forgetting or reconciling, how to forgive ourselves, and so much more, so we can truly find freedom in forgiveness. It's God's freedom, and once you own it, it will rock your world. Please go to our website to get the rest of Cure the Cancer of Unforgiveness in MP3 form for a one-time purchase of $1.95. All proceeds help our nonprofit continue to reach tens of thousands of people with this life-changing content. Go to littlebigthings.org/shop. We'll see you there.